And now, in the light of history.
We've got to teach history based not on what's in fashion, but what's important.
A look into the past for insight on the present, providing context for our current controversies.
We weren't just marking time, we made a difference.
Here's Michael.
When Rick Santorum got into a world of controversy and trouble by suggesting that Native Americans did not make a major contribution to the shaping of American culture or the founding of the United States, the best answer to him was, well, hey, Rick, buddy, you're speaking against a congressional resolution that came out in 1988, where Daniel Inouye, who was a committee of the Indian Affairs Committee, got through a resolution passed by both houses of Congress acknowledging the influence of the Iroquois Confederacy on the U.S. Constitution. In addition to that general recognition, the resolution reaffirmed the continuing government-to-government relationship between Indian tribes and the United States, established in the Constitution an acknowledgement of the legitimacy and sovereignty of Native nations and their governments. Now, that's fine. But what isn't fine is the misleading claim that the Constitution was based on the Iroquois Confederacy. And as recently as 2014, there was a popular meme all over the internet that claimed the following. The U.S. Constitution owes its notion of democracy to the Iroquois tribes, including freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and separation of powers and government. Only difference is the Iroquois included women and non-whites. And that's accompanied by a reproduction of a 1856 painting of the Founding Fathers signing the U.S. Constitution in 1787. Now, what is all this based on? It's based basically on nonsense. And I might tell you that PolitiFact, which is not by any means a right-wing source, evaluated in interviews with seven leading historians the claim in that meme that the ideas of democracy were based on the Iroquois tribes, rated as mostly false. So what is the truth? The truth is the Iroquois Confederacy was made up of a series of tribes in upstate New York, the Mohawk, Seneca, Onondaga, Oneida, Cayuga, and later the Tuscarora people joined the Iroquois Confederacy. And this was actually a group of tribes who decided to stop fighting each other so they could fight other Indians. And they were very successful because largely they figured out making peace with British settlers and getting guns and other weapons from those settlers that gave the Iroquois a terrific advantage. What a lot of this is based on is a very interesting gathering that took place in 1744 in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. There was a treaty conference that included Ben Franklin, and he was very impressed by an address to the treaty conference where the representatives of the Iroquois got together with representatives of Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia, and they were addressed by a guy named Canasatego, who was an Onondaga chief, and he spoke to them in words that were recorded by Benjamin Franklin. And what he said, and through partially at least the help of a translator, he said, "We heartily recommend union and a good agreement between you and our brethren. Never disagree, but preserve a strict friendship for one another. And thereby you, as well as we, will become the stronger. Our wise forefathers established union and amity between the five nations. This has made us formidable. This has given us great weight and authority with our neighboring nations. We are a powerful confederacy," said the chief, "and by your observing the same methods our wise forefathers have taken, you will acquire fresh strength and power. Therefore, whatever befalls you, never fall out with one another." Okay, obviously he had noticed that there was squabbling in the way of Americans from different states, from Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, would squabble with one another. And he said, "Hey, cut it out. Join together as we Iroquois have. And look how well it's worked for us." And it made an impression on Ben Franklin. But 7 years after hearing that speech, he was still trying to carry the lessons from it, but you can tell by what he said in a letter in 1751 means that he wasn't planning to try to imitate in every detail the Iroquois scheme of government. What he wrote in 1751, arguing for why the 13 colonies should form a voluntary union, he said, "It would be a very strange thing if six nations of ignorant savages should be capable of forming a scheme for such an union and be able to execute it in such a manner as that it has subsisted ages. It appears indissoluble, and yet that a like union should be impracticable for 10 or a dozen English colonies, to whom it is more necessary and must be more advantageous, and who cannot be supposed to want an equal understanding of their interests." And some 36 years after that particular letter, Ben Franklin was there at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. But it's very much worth remembering that the scheme that they used in the Constitutional Convention had almost nothing in common with the Iroquois Confederacy, except for this idea of disparate states joining together, because the Iroquois Confederacy was governed in a hereditary manner. They would have a council of different sachems who came from different tribes, but those were hereditary positions, not elected positions. And they had another interesting thing that, of course, has made it very popular with the politically correct set, which is that if someone died while he was a sachem from a given tribe and he left behind a widow, his wife was able to pick his successor in the councils of the Six Nations, the Iroquois Nations. Look, this is taking nothing away from the Iroquois, who had used partially their diplomatic and their war-making ability to become the dominant confederation of tribes in all of the eastern United States. But even though it makes a pretty story and to say, oh, look, we learned so much from our Indian brothers, none of their governmental arrangements had anything about divided government, about a balance of power, about concurrent majorities, or any of the other aspects that make our Constitution durable and unique. Most of all, there was no voting, no representatives, no apportionment, and no executive. This is why it seems to me that one of the points that the historians all make is that there were lots of influences on the U.S. Constitution. Roman law, the ideals of Greek democracy, particularly the ideals of John Locke in England or Montesquieu in France, these influenced our founding fathers. But other than that one tenuous connection with Benjamin Franklin, the idea that we owe our Constitution to the Iroquois Confederacy or to any other Native American tribe or culture is a sweet, politically correct, maybe inspiring thought, but it has the great disadvantage of being not true, or as even PolitiFacts would judge it, mostly false. That's it for this much needed, it seems to me, and very timely in the light of history episode.